Welcome to The Last American Vagabond. I'm going to actually play the other entry there just so we don't get confused because I played sort of an interview, sort of a daily wrap-up today. Thank you for joining me. I have Derek joining today to go over some of his recent articles as well as some other stuff that I found to be very interesting that he and I were talking about prior to the show. Of course, a lot to talk about in any given day. So it'll just be another day of just jamming in what we can and putting things off until tomorrow that we'll have to talk about, which is basically my show every day. So Derek, thank you so much for being here today. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, brother. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you've had some really important articles that came out recently. So we're going to talk about that today, the biosecurity state and how it's important to see that it is bipartisan, or rather just above the two-party illusion, and as well as a lot of other things in regard to vaccines and some other points that you might find very interesting. So stay tuned till the end, because there's a lot to get into.
Wall Street and biotechnology companies have been very excited about this idea. And what essentially it is trying to hack the cells in the body in order to make them into drug factories.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. So that'll be Saturday, January 2nd, 2020. So let's start off right with your first article, Derek. And this is one that is, I mean, it's really important, not just because of this, it's been an ongoing topic. Something that's been here forever that people have been kind of kicking down the road to a degree. But now this crossover, and this is something that I've been really, really driving in. Since I think it's become pretty clear that, save for some last really, you know, wishful thinking hopes here, that Trump is pretty much not going to win. And that we're seeing this kind of like handing off of the baton, almost as if Trump is doing things that he knows will help the Biden administration continue to spy on us unjustly. So for those on the podcast, the title is "The Trump Administration is Setting the Stage for a Biden Surveillance State." So what made this, when you first started writing this article, was it specifically about the crossover between the two, or, you know, what was it that caught your attention about that?
Well, the first thing that caught my eye is that it was, you know, I saw this press release from the American Civil Liberties Union talking about this expansion of basically the police state, the surveillance state at the border, which has been expanding exponentially under Donald Trump. You know, a lot of his supporters sort of turned a blind eye to it, or maybe made an excuse for it, because obviously Trump ran and talked a lot about immigration and border control and, you know, reducing these kinds of problems with illegal immigration. So whenever they hear, well, he's beefing up the border security, he's making it, you know, stronger and tighter and building a wall or whatever, those are the kind of things that they like to hear. But many of them may not realize that they are actually helping build the surveillance state and the police state. And especially some folks who probably previous to Trump were against those things, maybe during the Obama years. But what we've seen during the Trump years is that they basically build what has been called occasionally a bio wall, or an electric digital wall, where there's not a physical wall yet. Obviously, there's pieces of this wall that Trump has somewhat built along the border. But what they have installed is facial recognition cameras up and down the northern and southern borders, as well as license plate camera reader cameras, which can, you know, take a real quick snapshot, cameras from distance away. And I wrote during the Trump administration several articles about this, including some that are linked in the Last American Vagabond article. And I remember even a couple of years ago, they were installing cameras that they were bragging about, saying that these cameras could, they could see the person sitting in the back seat, see their face, you know, from more than a mile away, and with using some of these license plate reader cameras. So they're not just grabbing license plate and tracking that, but they're, you know, they're looking in people's vehicles. And so there's been this huge amping up of fighting immigration with digital surveillance and that whole security state. And a couple of years ago, the ACLU was making some noise. I think it was 2017. When the Trump administration announced that the DHS was going to start doing this entry and exit program, where everybody was going to have to be subjected to facial recognition cameras and potentially, you know, obviously things like thumbprints are kind of common already, but retina scan and other forms of biometrics in the coming years. And at the time, it was mainly focused on the idea of immigrants coming in, like not just illegal immigrants, but all immigrants coming to the country. We're going to have to deal with this first. And again, some people won't bat an eye about that. It was like, well, they're immigrants coming to this country. We should track them and make sure we know that they're legit. And, you know, maybe there's arguments to be had for that, but it's clearly a stepping stone towards doing it for everybody. And then eventually the Border Patrol and the DHS did admit that this was a program that would be expanded to all Americans as they've been testing up facial recognition at airports and doing these kinds of things. So the article basically is looking at,
let me add a point really quickly to that. I think it's important people to understand that this, I got a lot of flack for this, a lot of pushback when I first made this point. I believe this was in the discussion of not just the wall, but that at the time it was immigration, a lot from Venezuela coming up. Remember the whole whatever happened to that massive mob of people that was going to destroy our country, right? They didn't, you know, it's funny. I was just thinking about that now. But the idea that our Constitution does afford certain rights, even to undocumented immigrants or whatever you want to call it, is a fact. And there's been numerous precedents set in this country on that same point. And even if it wasn't, doesn't that seem exactly what we pretend our whole premise embodies, that we're helping? I mean, look at how this country was founded. We pride ourselves on Ellis Island, but we talk about something like this, and they're fundamentally contradictory. I just want people to know that, that the Constitution does in fact afford certain rights and privileges, even to people that are not Americans. And that's important. And I also add before you go forward that Canada, I believe in the one, I forget if it was Ontario or not, but they're already currently rolling out DNA information through the border. So if you're coming through the border, they're taking DNA swabs and so on. And it's just, this is something that is already happening right in front of us. And that's very alarming. So please continue.
Yeah, well, and that's also happening with the U.S. too. And I don't know if I actually linked it in this, the article that I put together for TLAV, but that is another thing that has happened during the Trump administration. Actually, it happened in 2020, the announcement of a DNA collection program in the U.S. So that is also happening in the U.S. already. And it is a good point that you brought up, that the United States claims to care that, or, you know, believe, which I think we should believe, that liberties apply to all people, no matter where they're born. And that the Constitution should apply to people, that, you know, we don't just treat people because they're from a different country. They don't get granted rights. Like, that's something that's supposed to be unique to the United States. Obviously, it hasn't been followed since 9/11 and before, but that's at least what we pay lip service to. So this new rule change, though, that I focused the article on, was announced in mid-November by the Border Patrol. And it basically was talking about another expansion, exponential expansion of facial recognition surveillance at the border. And again, specifically focused at the moment on immigrants. And so you have the Electronic Frontier Foundation, Fight for the Future, the American Civil Liberties Union, and a bunch of other digital rights organizations, privacy organizations coming together and trying to raise awareness about this. And I think there's a lawsuit that's going to be taking place. But the update from the Border Patrol says that they have the intention to take the face print of every single non-US citizen who enters and exits the United States. And like I said, they've already been talking about this for years. So I don't think this is anything new. It's just kind of, they might be trying to expand things as quick as possible before Trump leaves office. As you said, it does seem that that's what's going to happen. And then of course, this system could be used by Joe Biden. The rule also applies to children. The face prints, which is what your face is known as, like a thumbprint, a face print, can be held by the government up to 75 years, they claim. I mean, who's to say they would ever stop holding it? But that's what they're claiming now, that they can have it for up to 75 years.
Or that they're not doing it now. I mean, it's ridiculous to pretend that they're not holding images right now when there's so much, you know, that's kind of naive, I would say. But
yeah, exactly. And, you know, so this is going to be shared by the DHS to foreign governments, federal, state, local governments. It's going to be used by pretty much anybody who can get their hands in it. And I just wanted to kind of call attention to that. But the title of the article and the way that I was kind of ending the article was trying to raise awareness that facial recognition has been a problem for a number of years. And I point to a few different reports. For one, that last year there was 40 different organizations, digital rights, privacy organizations, AI organizations, who were writing a letter to the U.S. government and to a watchdog organization, basically claiming, saying, like, we need to ban facial recognition ASAP before we can do more research and studies, because it poses a grave threat to freedom and to liberty and privacy. And that was basically ignored. Then June 2019, Georgetown Law Center on Privacy and Technology, they issued this really massive report that I thought was great. It's called America Under Watch, Face Surveillance in the U.S. And again, warning that there should be a moratorium on facial recognition surveillance until more research is done. None of these things are being reported by the mainstream or acknowledged, and most people aren't even aware, or they're already kind of used to it because they're doing the freaking iPhone, you know, look at their face to open their phone, or they're doing things that are already kind of, I guess they're already used to it. And of course, COVID is just accelerating the use of things with like thermal face scanners and those kinds of things. So I wanted to not only call attention that, hey, this is what the Trump administration is doing, but this has been going on for the entire Trump administration, and it precedes the Trump administration. And as with every sort of, I would say, with most major issues besides the different kind of fringe issues and wedge issues that the Democrats and the Republicans argue about, that this is how the power changes hands. They always pass the baton down. One guy does, you know, Bush does something really horrible and sets it in place, and Obama campaigns on repealing that and, you know, getting all the bad guys out. And then he comes in office and says, never mind, we're not going to do that. And they continue and expand. And then Trump, you know, it just keeps going on and on. So I don't expect that Biden will do anything different, and instead will probably keep all these same systems in place and make use of them in his own ways and expand them in his own ways and pass them on to whoever's coming in after that.
Yeah. And that, I think that's very obvious to see. I mean, just simply by the people he's put in his cabinet, by the statements they've already made, it's clear that that's going to happen. And it'll all be under the guise that this is a good thing, though. It's for you. It's for your safety, you know, and that's what this is all centered around. I think you and I already talked about a different discussion from a different angle about them trying to argue that they would be collecting iris scans at the border of children specifically. Was that you that I talked about with that?
I think we did talk about that. Yeah.
It's just interesting to see all these different angles, and specifically tailored towards children. And I find that alarming in and of itself, but just this idea that they're able to continue to amass this data about, I mean, and also remember that since 9/11, it's become quite clear that the idea of mass gathering of information has been shown to be not useful in the way that they claim it is. It's not useful to keep us safe. It's useful to keep them safe from us. That's what it boils down to. And that's what 9/11 and all the chaos aftermath has shown us, you know, and I think that's very apparent. But yeah, I think that this whole thing is a something that we need to be aware of, because what will happen is it will get pitted in the two-party narrative. And it will, I mean, think about it. And this is a great example, like Guantanamo, right? Guantanamo is something that every American should be horrified by, and something that was, you know, kept from our view for quite a long time. And then it was finally, okay, well, Obama was so pressured to get this thing, he announced it every year of his presidency. We're going to close Guantanamo. Never did it. And then suddenly, because Trump simply changed the narrative, it became a signal of our freedom. I mean, that's incredible to me, you know, and it just shows you how much social engineering is happening. And now all of a sudden it's going to be. So the point is, this same thing will be flipped on its ear, and it will be, oh, that bad thing Trump was doing is now good because we're good people. You know,
propaganda is strong.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Which could bring us to the next article that you wrote. And these last two, we've already sort of talked about. So if you want to comment on them, I'll give you the opportunity, and we can jump forward to the vaccine stuff if you'd like to get into it. But I do find this to be a relevant step from what we were just talking about, right? So while all of this is happening, so coming off the concept of them essentially building in front of us under the guise of other things, something they've always been wanting to continue to flesh out, this a massive surveillance state, biosecurity state, you know, contact tracing and so on. We also have them passing things we've already touched on to some degree, but the COVID stimulus bill, which I'd argue about 70% of it had nothing to do with COVID whatsoever, right? So they're saying, we're going to do this for you because you can't, you know, feed your family, and then give billions to Israel and so on, as well as the same kind of thing happening with the NDAA. Even though this is still going back and forth, the point is they're trying to jam in things that are, I would literally call, un-American. So what do you have comments on this, or what are your thoughts on this before we jump to the next topic?
Yeah, I'll just be brief with this one, but I definitely think that the NDAA is something that people need to pay attention to. In fact, what I wrote this article maybe almost 2 weeks ago, and they just announced today that they did override Trump's veto, that Congress override his veto. And so what the article here was basically saying is like, look, while the mainstream's talking to you about, oh, is Trump going to veto this? And mainly they were focusing on, you know, he doesn't like the fact that they're going to change some of the army bases from Confederate soldier names, and like, oh, boo boo. And Trump's like, these are American, you know, our American traditions. We're not going to let the radical leftists erase them. And then the other topic was the battle over Section 230 of the Communications Act, which I also think is sort of a red herring, because Trump, like, and I, you know, I think we may have talked about this before, but I definitely think that the idea that removing Section 230 or getting the government more involved in social media is going to make things better is definitely not it's going to turn out the way people think it is. So Trump has a lot of people cheering on, like, do something. He needs to take down big tech. And they don't realize that they're calling for more government intervention, which definitely doesn't usually end up well. So I kind of argue that those are sort of non-issues, or not that they're non-issues, that they don't have a place and a time for debate, but they're not the big thing that we should be focusing on. And one major thing is, of course, that for the last going on 10 years now, every version of the National Defense Authorization Act, which is the military budget bill, and just like with the stimulus bill, it's packed full of all kinds of other things. Every year, Obama and now Trump have signed it and authorized it with the still included provision, Section 1022, 1021 and 1022, which were passed under the Obama administration in 2012, which specifically allow for indefinite detention of American citizens who are accused of, you know, terrorism, whatever that means. And
they want it to mean. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And they don't have a right to trial by jury or any of those kinds of, again, constitutional things that we're supposed to have. But of course, it's like, well, they're terrorists, right? Or they're accused of it, and you lose your rights, according to these people.
Right.
So that has stayed in there, and there wasn't a single person that spoke out about it. Well, I did note that on December 10th, Rand Paul spoke out about it briefly. And I do believe he voted against it. And then Justin Amash, who left the Republican Party to become a Libertarian, he did tweet about it and say that he was going to vote no on it, as he is every year. And he tweeted, bring home the troops, stop indefinite detention without charge or trial, and fight the military-industrial complex. So, you know, very few people out there in Congress or Senate, you know, speaking up for the people and trying to get this removed. So that argument gets totally ignored. And then the last point I made in here is that while we're talking about Section 230 and Confederate base names and whatever else, and Trump's like, oh, I'm going to veto it, there's no mention that this bill has more legislation stuffed in it than ever any other bill before to doing with artificial intelligence and AI and right. Just the whole biosecurity state. And I called it the artificial intelligence military industrial complex, because it's basically not only giving the military more access to AI and creating new departments and committees and initiatives all about updating the existing artificial intelligence and giving them more power, as well as creating the Joint Artificial Intelligence Center, moving that directly under the Deputy Secretary of Defense. So it's just lining up all the pieces for the military to prepare for their whole cyber war thing. And I kind of tie it into, of course, the recent reports about the SolarWinds hack and how there have been folks saying, oh, this proves why Trump needs to pass this, why we need to pass this bill, because the SolarWinds hack shows we need all these AI things just perfectly timed for them.
Right.
And then of course, pointing out that Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum, as well as Jeremy Jurgens, the World Economic Forum Managing Director, have both talked about the potential for a cyber pandemic and cyber attack. And, you know, so I still think that we haven't even seen the beginning of where this whole solar wind storyline is going and how that's mm-hmm. going to tie in. But those are things that I saw that I haven't seen anybody talking about. And of course, Trump was threatening to veto it. He did veto it. And then Congress just overrode his veto, and so it's going to be law.
I would argue it's a hollow. I mean, he knew that. I mean, things could have changed in between that time. That's always possible. But it was very clear that there was obvious support from both sides, and it was, you know, I think for the first, this is the first time we've seen this happen where they've actually overridden one of his vetoes. And I think it was meant to be a hollow gesture. That's just my take. I mean, the point is obviously this is something that's beneficial for Israel. It's beneficial for a lot of people, and in every way is detrimental to Americans and their constitutional rights, you know, but this is obvious at the point of artificial intelligence and even 5G. This is something that his followers are completely overlooking, or rather just justifying, because of one point that's made. You know, this is what they do, is they get you reduced down to one little thing. I mean, Trump even put out a tweet that said, when this was going to be vetoed, you know, say goodbye to your, you know, bases with these names, say goodbye to, and he lists off a bunch of things, one of which was 5G. Say goodbye to 5G. His followers are going to pretend like that's some kind of a, you know, miss, you know, wink, wink. I'm not talking about what I'm literally saying. It's just crazy that we don't see now, especially as, I mean, a lot of the arguments they make for him is that he was setting things up for this next term. Even if that was true, do you not see that it's not going to happen now? That it's, you know, you basically built up bad things that were 40 chess moves and just handed them to Biden. I mean, we need to begin to see past this savior complex, you know, but I wanted to comment on the Section 230 thing. I agree with you completely. Like completely. It's, I've been saying this from the very beginning. In a perfect world, you could argue that what he's saying there might have some merit. But in the scenario that we're in currently, you're right. All you're doing is giving more power, more influence to the government, which is the government's why we have the problem we do. So it makes no sense to give it to them. If they remove this liability, all it's going to do is give these platforms the carte blanche to say, well, we're going to censor whatever we want now. because we're liable for, you know, we can be held accountable. So you're gone for no justification whatsoever. I don't know why we can't see that logical step. You know, I think the belief is that Trump will step in and do something that will change that scenario to for the better. It's just blind faith in a person to do the right thing, you know, and yeah. As long as we should hope people do the right thing, but blind faith in a person is never panned out in this country or anywhere else, I would argue.
You know? And I just want to add to that before we move on, that I also think that the people who do maybe have that faith in Trump or any person just need to rethink that, because a lot of those same people would argue that they are, you know, constitutionalists, they're patriots, they're defending the country or whatever. But the idea that, okay, well, I like this guy, Trump, whoever he may be, with this person that you've put your faith in or you voted for, whatever you've endorsed basically through your actions and your vote. And you think this person's smart enough, they're good enough, they're, you know, they have enough morals or whatever it is you argue to make this big decision. But even if you thought that was true, that's essentially giving Trump or whoever else the powers of being a king, of being a monarch, which is definitely not what this country is supposed to be about or be founded about. So I'm not a huge constitutionalist myself, for my own reasons, because I think the whole thing is corrupted from top to bottom. But still, if that's the place you're coming from, if that's the position you're taking, you need to think about how you're calling for these actions that totally erode the intention of the Constitution and just give this one person power because you think they're going to do good.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, we should point out that at least I think I'm sure you would agree that Biden is exactly the same, right? It's a scenario that's just kind of, you know, it's nebulous. It's all of them.
In case that needs to be said, yes, Biden is.
I know, right? And that's you know, the frustrating part is that that is something, you know, that it just, remember 2016, Trump and Clinton, you couldn't say anything in any regard without being named one or the other, right? You say even if you're, you know, you know what I'm saying, you support one side or the other, you get named as the other side. And it's childish. It really is childish.
In 2012, if you were criticizing Obama, then you must love Romney. If you're criticizing Romney, then you must love Obama. And it's going to happen, unfortunately, for the next every four years for the rest of our lives until people wake up to this, man.
Yeah. And so we can pull ourselves out of this nonsense. I absolutely agree. But let's get into some bigger nonsense, because this is the biggest nonsense going on around the world today. So this is something, just to start off, kind of a comical but yet poignant, on the nose sort of point. The CDC says the flu is almost non-existent this year because of wearing masks and social distancing. The CDC simultaneously also says that COVID-19 is out of control because no one is wearing masks or social distancing. Comments. That's not a joke, by the way. It is a meme.
I love that.
100% accurate. This is actually happening right now. It just blows my mind. What do you think about that? Did I lose you?
I mean, I think it's just clear that there's... Now, can you hear me? Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, it's just clear that there's no rationale to anything we're doing. Obviously, you've covered this, like, you know, to ad nauseum, like you've buried it into the ground, like showing that there's no real science behind any of this. And this is just... you know, just one of the examples of that they can say one thing on one channel, and then you can flip over and you say, well, what about this other thing? And they say, well, no, that's because of that same thing we're telling you is it's causing the other thing. I mean, there's just no logic to it. There's no reason, no rhyme. And I think that's, again, being done by purpose. I'm sure we've said this before, and I know you have, that the disinformation campaign is complete, right? People don't know what's up, what's down. They don't know if Trump's a good guy. They don't know if Trump's a bad guy. They don't know if January 6th is coming. They don't know if there's flu or is there not a flu. I don't know, but I'm scared, so I'm just going to do what they tell me to, because it's easier than, you know, being outcasted. I think this is very much being done by design and all these different ways. And hopefully people, especially those who are tuned into your programs, and I know lots of people, we mentioned this recently, that my work's growing, your work's growing. People are sharing this content. We were talking about this a little bit off air. We do still get these positive messages of people who are saying, thank you, help me see through this particular lies about this topic, especially COVID related. So I do think that the more insane they get, maybe it's helping us more and more, right? There's that going to be that equal and opposite reaction. So the more tyrannical they get, they're going to incidentally wake some people up just by moving so quickly, right? Some people might still stay under the hypnosis, but others will continue to wake up. And the less and less things make sense, the average people out there who aren't conspiracy theorists, who don't spend their whole time kind of in these circles that we run in, they find themselves just asking, like, huh, that's really weird. That doesn't make any sense to me. And maybe they think of that one weird, quote unquote, crazy friend they have, and they go reach out and say, hey, you know, tell me some more about this stuff you've been, you know, ranting about, because I don't know if this makes sense. So I guess I'm just saying that, honestly, I think this has to happen. I think things have to get a little more crazy before people start wising up.
I agree. That's the thing is it's, you know, even historically speaking, there's all, it does take some kind of intense times, to put it lightly, until change actually begins. I mean, looking back, it does, you know, violence for the most part, my hope is that we've progressed to a point of humanity to where violence doesn't need to be the segue between change, you know, between different scenarios of time. I think we need to find some kind of new, you know, draw outside the lines, outside the box, I keep putting it, because I truly believe violence begets violence. And we can see that throughout history. You know, one group, even with good intentions, use violence to overthrow something that ends up falling right back into the same paths. I mean, look, like, kind of to your point about the Constitution, right? I'll argue, to a degree, disagree, because I do think that the Constitution itself is sound. I believe that. And I think it's been bastardized. But, you know, it's both of those are opinions, you know? But at the end of the day, we can see that even with good concepts, that people can change and manipulate and lie, deceive, right? There's always going to be bad people. I believe everyone is capable of both, you know? So we just need to realize that we can't just rely on one person, one group, one entity, one outlet, you know? It's what it really comes down to. But going forward on, oh, go ahead. Do you have a point?
I just wanted to offer one thing there before we move on, and not to get too sidetracked. I'll just share it with you, Adam, you know, because I know you like to dig in and learn, and for the audience, because just to challenge a little bit on the Constitution, because obviously I use it as a shield whenever I need to, right? If it's valuable, then use it when you can, right? But we also know that, like you said, it's been kind of ignored and people don't follow it. But I do want to say there is this really awesome author, one of the first individualist kind of anarchists in the U.S. His name is Lysander Spooner, and you might be familiar with him, but he wrote a short essay that you can find called The Constitution of No Authority. And basically back in he was alive in the late 1700s, 1800s. So even in the 1800s, you know, less than 100 years after the Constitution, the American Revolution, he was already showing and writing about how the state at that point was already gaining power, was already abusing and ignoring the Constitution. And he kind of had this argument that either the Constitution in the way that it was written allowed these things to happen. And it was, you know, there was maybe like kind of loopholes or things that would allow the power and the tyranny to grow one way or the other, or the Constitution was helpless to stop it from happening. And therefore, you know, was not a good enough document, basically. And so he kind of writes this idea that just because there's words on paper that some men wrote hundreds of years ago doesn't mean that we should be confined to them. Of course, we should take the good ideas that come out of there and the ideas of individual liberty, but aspire to actually uphold them, you know? So I think when people talk about the Constitution, generally that's what they're aiming for, this kind of mythological version of American history and what we would like it to be. But I also do think there are some inherent flaws. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, no, that's excellent points. I mean, you're absolutely right. And it really comes, I mean, you cannot deny what you said. Obviously it's either there's a problem there or, you know, what you said exactly, because we are here, we're dealing with it now. But it's like I've always said from the beginning in that discussion that right from the in that very room, in the signing of the document, there were people that wanted what we have today. Right. There was the discussion between the federalized government and the whole people wanted to have this kind of powerful entity. And arguably the other side won. But that doesn't mean right off the bat there weren't people that were undermining it as every way they could. And so you're absolutely right. You know, I think what it comes down to is it's more about principles. It's more about guidelines, because we know the point of the Constitution is not that it's rules or state. It's that they're writing down things that are inherent. Whether they wrote them down or not, they're inherent. And the point is to humans, to people, right? Not just Americans, right? And that's, you know, it's become something that the government has taken, bastardized, used against us. And so your point is right. You know, maybe the point is we always need to be getting better and evolving and changing and trying to better ourselves and not just be complacent with what powerful people tell us we should be doing, right? So excellent point. So here, back on the flu discussion, I want to point this out, and I point this out a lot lately just because of how interesting it is, back to this concept of, you know, the flu is non-existent, which is just really stupid. Like at a core level is really dumb. But I want to show that you can see here that this is current as of the last date that they have. I just updated it before we went live, and it apparently shows that there's nothing going on. November, December, you know, just seems green and pretty nothing, right? But if you go back to the last year, go back to November. Look at where we were in November and December. Look at what's going on right there. That's supposed to be right now. And we're going to pretend like that's happening because of measures that are somehow not stopping COVID. In fact, I mean, this is what's so stupid is this is not a joke. They're telling us that the reason flu is not there is because people are abiding by the rules. But yet then at the same time, COVID's out of control because people are not abiding by the rules. You can't make both those arguments, but we right now you'll see them both on mainstream platforms. It's incredible to me. And I also want to point out, here's the Guardian. This is the winter. This is NHS from the UK. Their narrative, it's not new. This is not even something new in regard to hospitals. Every year, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, all the way to 2019, every year, hospitals full to bursting as bed shortages hit. Hospitals scrambled to prevent crisis. More patients overstretched. Doctors, wow, there before defending a winter crisis. I mean, every year, literally every year, all the way up until right before this, hospital beds at record low. And here we are again. Now it's a bigger deal because we're being told we're in some kind of pandemic. But how is it the same every year? Nothing changes, right? I mean, it's almost unbelievable that people can't see how deceived we're being, how we're being deceived. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Man, again, it's just, that's a really awesome visual. I definitely appreciate if you put that together, whoever did, because that's, it's helpful. But I think that's, you know, it's indicative of the fact that people don't pay attention, man. How many people are honestly thinking about what the news told them last winter on this outlet? They just take that information in. Oh, well, I need to be concerned. The news is telling me that there's hospitals overflowing with, you know, hospital beds. And maybe it didn't faze anybody before, but now since they're being told there's this super deadly thing going around, people are like more apt to be afraid, right? And then you can show them something like that. And I would guarantee folks who are really buying into this would probably brush it off as like, well, you know, we have things happen every winter, but it's worse this year or whatever they have to say to kind of like justify their panic and their feeling. And I'm trying to, in 2021, develop more of a sense of empathy than I ever have for the people who are dealing with this, because I definitely know that we are dealing with massive indoctrination program. And these people have worked this out for years. I mean, I was reflecting on my top stories of 2030 articles and reports and things I put together. And a couple of them, more than a few of them, were from The Last American Vagabond. And I reflect back on the parasite stress theory that, yeah, that I covered in those articles and that we covered. And these people know psychologically that humanity is going to respond to the threat of a pathogen in this way that will encourage obedience, conformity, and allow them to accept authoritarianism from governments. I mean, we should not forget that this is a very real fear that taps in deep into the human psyche. And these crazy people are absolutely aware of this. Like, and so that's what we're witnessing right now. We're witnessing the psychological experiment play out that we found in those studies that look,
right,
this is how people are going to respond. And you can look in the world and you can see this live experiment playing out. And it's insane, really.
It really is. And I mean, I haven't seen any other independent media or media even touch on that topic. And I mean, are we going to pretend like they don't know about those studies? And the point at the end of the day, for those that haven't, and I'll have to remember to grab that and put it in the show notes, is that real or not? Like in the study, they make a point to say whether it's a real pandemic or not, it has the same outcome, where people are more willing to accept authoritarian governments, where they're willing to snitch on their neighbors. I mean, that is almost, it's just disconcerting. I mean, it really is. Let me see if I can just grab it real quick while we're talking. But
I definitely want to just encourage everybody to check that out, because it was a two-part series that we put together about parasite stress theory, looking at the studies. And in the second one, what I did was tie in those studies into what we saw the Rockefeller lockstep scenario described.
Right.
And there's just these incredible correlations between the two that I don't think can be ignored. And you're right, I haven't seen anybody else cover them at all. So I want to throw a quick shout out to my buddy Johnny, who's a friend and a big fan of yours, who's the one who initially showed me these studies, and it kind of opened up a big rabbit hole for me. But I definitely think people should recognize that. And in the articles, I did show that at least one of the researchers that was involved in the studies does have connections to the Gates Foundation. And I'm not saying it's, you know, that's directly led to Bill Gates, but it is a connection that probably shouldn't be ignored with everything we know.
Yeah. Oh, I thought I was showing this just so you guys can see it. Yeah, I completely agree. I'll make sure to include this in the show notes for everyone to read. This is a really important one. I've actually referenced this probably 15 times since we wrote this article, because it just is, it's easily one of the most relevant things to consider the general perspective. You know, not getting into the weeds of whether they did this or did that or fake this or fake that, just simply that regardless of how we got here, this is something they know about. And you can see that from Gavin Newsom's actions all the way down to local police. You can see the way that they're acting. And it's quite alarming. It really is. But to go forward on that same topic, there's an interesting thing for people to consider. This is a party leader in London from the assembly member. There is strong evidence of a correlation between flu jabs, you know, vaccines and COVID-19 deaths. Causation should be investigated. And this is something we've talked about relentlessly because I mean, James Corbett did a great documentary about this or video showing the same things that we've been talking about, but really going even deeper and showing what the study showed you, which was a Pentagon study in 2020 that came to the conclusion that flu vaccines created a 36% higher chance of causing other infections, which they included, one of which was coronaviruses. Now, they claim it doesn't apply because they didn't say COVID-19, but that's the same sidestep they use with Kary Mullis and the, you know, he didn't say COVID, he was talking about HIV, and really he just said viruses, but they're just playing word games. The point is, as you can see here, that this is incredible. This is, it says, using the EU publication Vaccines Today, we gather data on flu vaccines, vaccination coverage in older people and compare these to overall COVID mortality from the United Nations database. And this is the Worldometer, which is one that I've pointed to many times. We are unable to update vaccination data for autumn 2020, but we have added the latest mortality figures. Now, I just want you to take a quick look at this. Anybody that has a high, you know, the correlation is almost undeniable. And the correlation is not causation. But this is an important point. United Kingdom, 72.6% flu vaccination correlates with the highest amount of COVID deaths, and so on all the way down. That's incredible. Like, I don't even know how you deny something like that. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I hadn't seen that. That's really powerful to see there. But of course, we've been, like you said, we've been seeing things that have pointed to the same mm-hmm. problem here. And I don't know, how recent did this come out? Just like the last couple of days?
Yeah, this one is, let's see, December 18th.
Yeah, now, so I'm not surprised we haven't seen anything about this, of course, in the mainstream anywhere. I'm sure that we could probably find a fact check on this or some sort of
You
know, way to dismiss it. But the numbers don't lie. And unfortunately, I mean, I just want to say that in addition to what you're doing, what I'm attempting to do, what other people are doing, for the folks that see this information, like, it's important. Yes, share that article, share this video talking about the article. But also don't hesitate to print some of this information out on a flyer, you know, call your friends and family. Like, I think, and I know I've said this on your show before, that we're at a really crucial time where for each of these bits of information, there's a lot we have, and it can be a little bit overwhelming. But if you just pick out the few pieces that you feel will appeal to people the most or get their attention the most, or the, you know, the kind of most rigorous, undebunkable piece of information, and you decide to put that on a flyer or make a meme out of it, or you know, text your grandma about it or whatever it may be. Like, people need to really be making an attempt to get this. Cause as I was pointing at, there's no coverage of this in the mainstream, obviously. And if there is any coverage, it's just debunking, it's fact checking, whatever. But we have, and it, of course, it reminds me of 9/11. We have so much information available that proves that they're lying, but it's just about getting that information in front of the public. If the public doesn't know it's existing, the public doesn't understand it. If the public's only hearing that, you know, the people who are dismissing this are crazy people who believe in lizards or whatever they want to say, you know, like the Nashville bomber, then we're not going to get anywhere. So I just want to reemphasize that it's important that we're covering this, but I also would say that it's even more important that the people who are hearing this information take the initiative to do something with it, you know, whatever that means. However you best disseminate information through your circles and your communities, make an effort to get it out there, because we can have all these statistics showing the flu is basically non-existent this year and it's all being replaced by COVID and the flu vaccine connection to COVID. But if we don't get that out to the public, then ultimately, I mean, it's not going to do us any good. I mean, it'll do those of us good who know it. But if we're surrounded by a lot of people who are just completely indoctrinated, as well as people who are dying and injured, then it's going to make our efforts and our goals, I think, a little bit harder to reach.
I completely agree. And I would add to that and say that it's what's important as well as that is to make sure that before you do any of that, that you read it in its entirety for yourself and you research it for yourself and find out another article claiming something that's involving with that, but a different angle, you know, like flesh it out and don't just listen, you know, whether you trust us or not, make sure that you research it for yourself, because the problem today that we're seeing is that people will, you know, decide that they trust us and take what we're saying about it and then regurgitate that, even in an honest way. But then when they get engaged by somebody else who's like, oh yeah, what do you know? There's nothing else. You'd reach back and, oh crap, I just have what I was said, what I was told, right? Yeah, there you go. Exactly. It's important. You need to do it for yourself and make sure that you're educated on the topic to be able to actually educate these people, right? You hand those flyers to somebody and then you try to engage you about it. And all you know what's written on the flyer, you're at a dead end, right? You want to make sure that you can branch out and engage them intelligently, you know, and that's exactly what Derek is advocating for as well. It's incredibly important. Now, I also want to add here to that point, just so, because I forgot, this is an important aspect of the same thing. This is on the same page, by the way. You go all the way down to the bottom. This is where it shows you. This is not a hypothetical, right? PIC, which, by the way, I've been talking about since the beginning, that the moment they started doing this, I'm finally starting to see other people, you know, point to this. But this is something that's not been hidden. It stands for pneumonia, influenza, and COVID. They are openly combining all three of them, right? You could argue that's potentially another 100,000 deaths that have nothing to do or potentially have nothing to do with COVID. Just because there's a secondary possibility of these things from COVID doesn't mean you can just sweep in every single one of them, which is what's happening. And it says right in here that you can see. And they even use these statistics of PIC to claim that we're still above an epidemic threshold, but you're combining two other instances of death. I mean, of death. I mean, it's just unbelievable how deceptive this whole thing is under a guise that it's for your best interest.
The CDC website?
Yeah, this is directly on the CDC website. Just so we're clear, I can go and show you guys that. There you go. All the links will always be included so you guys can check them out. Now, going forward, we also have Joe Biden saying, let me be clear, as if he wasn't clear before, the Biden-Harris administration will spare no effort to make sure people are getting vaccinated. That's a very carefully worded statement that could be taken as either threat or, you know, I guess, what would you call it? Don't worry, we're fighting. We'll make sure that you're safe. You know, people that believe that the vaccine is going to save them. So how do you take that, first of all?
Well, I think you've got the other article pulled up next with Fauci saying something similar, because I've been seeing these statements. I don't know if that's the one you have pulled up. I saw Newsweek up there. But yeah. I mean, so they're admitting they're putting everything on the table. Everything's going to be on the table. And I think that this is what we knew was going to happen, right? That they're going to they're going to sort of, you know, sidestep and talk vaguely until the point that it's literally happening. Now, I still don't think that we can say for certain it'll be mandatory. We've also seen, obviously, the talk of, because in that Fauci article, he specifically says, you know, we might not make it mandatory from a central government standpoint, but businesses and institutions are going to stop letting people in. So we know that they're going to restrict travel. We know that Ticketmaster talked about and then backed off, you know, restricting people from concerts unless they had immunity passports. All that stuff is going to come. So it might be a while before first the vaccines start rolling out. Then, you know, all the people who volunteer go for them. You know, there's going to be injuries. There will be injuries that will get covered up, absolutely, without a doubt. And they've planned for that. And they already are, and they're already covering them up, but there will be even more. And then they'll get to the point where, oh, well, as Fauci recently said, we need 90% herd immunity now, or 80% or something. You know, and I don't know if you saw that clip. I'm sure you might have played it, where he's literally just not speaking science. He's just like, well, we decided to change the number and just raise it up a little bit. We figured, like, well, we hit this high. Now there's more people taking it. Why don't we go up for an even higher?
What he essentially was lying, but it was not the way that it was kind of misinterpreted by some people who read it. Basically, what he said was that the 90, of course, this is how he makes it end up, but that 90% herd immunity was always what we needed. I just lied before because I didn't want to scare people away from me. You see what I mean? It's like the same thing with masks. He says, oh no, I was lying to protect hospitals, and now I'm telling you the truth. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
That's just silly.
Yeah. Well, I think that people should just be aware, because like the Biden said, what they're going to do everything they can to get everybody vaccinated. Of course, they're keeping it vague and sort of ambiguous. Fauci says everything's on the table. Again, vague and ambiguous. But what they're not being vague and ambiguous about is the fact that immunity passports are coming. The World Economic Forum's health pass, our common pass, clear. The people who do the other airport stuff, they're doing their health pass. These things are already being rolled out. They're already in existence. They're being used in some countries already. And I could even say that in the place where I'm at in Mexico, man, it's been crazy. I actually saw a week ago, I don't ever go to the mall mainly because of these kinds of things. You go to the big corporate places, there's going to be restrictions and mask requirements and stuff. But I went there for a moment to look for something, and I quickly turned around because as soon as we arrived there, we saw that there was a little tablet set up by the door that was doing facial thermal scan to people. And people were just not even hesitating. There was no sort of question of like, hey, who owns this company, or what's going to happen with this? How long is it stored? Right. And I think it's because here in Mexico, there's not as much awareness as there is in the U.S., even though in the U.S. there's a lot of passivity about privacy anyways, even though people know. But yeah, I mean, these things are already being rolled out around the world, immunity passports, thermal scanners. And so they might not make the vaccine mandatory immediately, or it could take some time, or maybe it won't ever happen. But they're going to make it difficult, as you, I, and many others are pointing out right now.
Yeah. I think it's important to remember too, is that those immunity passports and all this stuff they've been trying to subtly push these for a long time. COVID gave them the gold rush free for all to allow them to drive this in for your safety. Despite before all of this, Americans were pretty resistant to it. And I also, I have an interesting thought about the herd immunity, that it's, from the beginning, they've argued that, well, you know, kind of quietly that, well, if herd immunity doesn't work, well, then we'll have to think of something else, right? Like that's the they're putting the goalpost out there. Like that's what we're going toward. And they've taken actions in every way, almost it would seem, to make sure that they don't reach it. You know, I feel like the agenda is about the vaccine, but it's also about what's happening around it and because of it, right? So if they can get us to a situation where people are taking it, but they can still argue, well, did not enough got it, that will give them the justification to drive in the things we just talked about. So when you see them doing things like saying, oh, you know, all these people in this category shouldn't be getting it, or, you know, giving them these outs to be like, well, because that happened and then Americans were reluctant to it, we guaranteed they wouldn't reach it. That's just a thought, you know, that it seems like, as usual, kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, that they're making it happen the way they want it to. Interesting.
Absolutely. Though. Yeah, and it's going to be all victim blaming. It's because these people won't get the mask. They won't wear the mask. They won't social distance. They won't get a vaccine. That's why we can't reach herd immunity. It's their fault that, you know, we have COVID-21 now, or COVID-22 and COVID-23 and whatever else is next. I just want to throw in real quick, man, just as a reminder to anybody who has, I know we did a past interview about it, but I've seen it coming up more recently as folks are starting to discover the SPARS pandemic of 2025. I've had several people like, hey, have you heard about this? And I was like, yeah, I actually wrote an article about it, because the reason I thought the SPARS pandemic was unique, although it didn't describe as much destruction or didn't describe the authoritarian state like lockstep and others did, is because it acknowledged that there was going to be a growing anti-vaccine movement made of not just, you know, suburban white moms, but of Muslims, of African Americans, of like a number of different people. They also acknowledged that there would be vaccine injuries and that they would be covered up. And then that a couple years later, there would be lawsuits. And they also even said that after, and this is the SPARS pandemic simulation by the same people who brought you Event 201, that there would be neurological injuries up to a year after the vaccine started to take place. So I'm just saying, like, I think that pandemic, that SPARS pandemic simulation and what we're witnessing is playing some role in what we're watching, like that they have prepared for that. And I recommend everybody going back to check out that article in The Last American Vagabond.
I just can't believe, I'm still blown away by this, even now, going just referencing it, that they can, in their own simulation of themselves, they plan out that they're going to lie about covering up vaccine injuries. Like, do we not realize how to even explain that? At what point, what are you doing that's justifying, like, oh, well, we decided to cover these up? And then you write that into your, I'm just blown away by that. Now, as you're saying that, I want to make sure I grab that one as well. Here, let me just do that. Oh, look, there you go. Popped up perfectly right there. SPARS pandemic. Okay. Now I want to go to, where was it? This one we were talking about right here, because this is incredible. And it's really disgusting when you understand, I mean, just on a separate point, before we even go there, the idea that every American can continue to just go out and buy masks and reuse masks and continue to have all the things, you know, like we've never been at a point where we've been told that we have to do something and yet then we have to buy that thing. Like, think about how crazy that is. Like, even at a restaurant or a place you work, if you're required to wear a certain piece of uniform, they have to give it to you. They can't force you to buy what you need to work there. It's really crazy that they're saying that, like, you can't do all these things without this mask, but then we're also going to make sure that we're giving contracts for PPE to people that we want to have gold rush and masks. And like, the average American can't feed their family. They can't keep their bills on without support from the government, which is obviously the plan. Yet they think we're going to continue to buy face masks and buy materials, which, by the way, are dramatically polluting the planet. 129 million masks a month. That was in July. Imagine where it is now. I also think it's funny when you point out, to where are all those people that were screaming about climate change and polluting the planet? Oh, that's right. They're all wearing masks every 10 seconds and polluting everything with gloves. But anyway, here's another point. Drug makers to hike prices for 2021 as pandemic political pressure puts revenues at risk. Oh, because your revenues are what's most important, right? So people are more in need of these things, which my opinion, I think they should stop taking any of this garbage. But in their opinion, they're in need of these drugs. And there are some that are necessary. And yet they're hiking the prices in the middle of what they say is a crazy pandemic. And they know Americans can't even afford their bills. I mean, how does this stuff happen in a world where they're screaming about how noble and great and righteous we are? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, these are the same people that are trying to create us a more equitable and sustainable and just world, right?
Right, right. As they put, you know, dig in right when people are most vulnerable.
Yeah, and look, again, GlaxoSmithKline, right, is one of these companies. Moncef Slaoui, appointed by Trump as the head of Operation Warp Speed, comes from GSK, comes from that same background. You've got the other guy, Alex Azar, who was appointed I can't remember what his position, health secretary, one of those positions, but he's a lobbyist for Eli Lilly, another pharmaceutical company. I mean, so the pharmaceutical companies are running the whole recovery. Then they're at the same time making record profits. And then they're going to like, well, we're just going to hike up the drug prices as well and get a little bit more extra profits. Like while people are scraping by with $600 a month and
$600.
That. Yeah. Just $600 one time, one check, $600. And again, like this is all part of the Great Reset. I mean, I think we can't kind of take this in without really understanding what the motivations are, because it's being done by design. I know you've, you know, covered this as well, that the push towards poverty, the push towards people needing a digital ID, towards eventually some kind of UBI, probably tied to your vaccine status, you know, the push towards immunity passports. It's all being done by design. You know, so when I see folks saying, well, if the airlines want to have their immunity passports, well, we're just going to boycott them, then that'll teach them. But unfortunately, these people want to crash the airline industry. They want to crash. They don't, you know, they've said it in their plans, the Great Reset. They said that the earth is doing better now that we're traveling less and people are flying less. So stay home for the good of the planet. Don't go out. Don't, you know, do that. So they actually would like for the auto industry and the airline industries to suffer. It's not going to teach them anything for boycotting. And unfortunately, in this instance, and these folks, as we were saying earlier, these social engineers, the predator class, have really thought this out to the T, that no matter which move we make, they seem to benefit. You know, if we sit still and do nothing, it's going to get built. If we fight it, you know, and try to go out in the streets, well, then they're going to just declare the police state anyways. You know, it's like they've really positioned themselves in a great place to be. And I think people need to understand that when we're looking at all these disparate points of the drug prices are going up and the flu thing doesn't make sense, and well, why are they telling people to lock down even though they're losing money? And you start putting all these pieces together, you have to understand that this is their great vision, their great reset that they're calling for. And I just really hope people are thinking that in, because we're in 2021 now, and this is going to be probably the year that we see a lot of things that were being set up for in 2020 actually go live, actually come into existence. You know, last year we were warning people about immunity passports, and we were warning people about facial recognition. We were warning people about, hey, listen, you know, look what's going on in Australia, look what's going on in Italy, et cetera. And now people are getting it. You know, I have some friends who are having to head back to Canada because Canada just announced that if you're not in the country by January 7th, if you make it back, you'll be required to take a PCR test or have a negative test or be forcibly quarantined, not even in your home anymore, but in a health facility, those quarantine facilities we were talking about. So now it's like you don't even have the option to just go home for 14 days. You got to go to this other place. So these realities are going to become much more clear in 2021. And I have to leave in a few minutes, brother, but I would like to talk a little bit about the greater reset as the solution to that, if we could.
Thanks for letting me know. I'll continue after you take off and go over the rest of the points here. But Derek has limited time today. So we were going to talk about, make sure you guys stay tuned, because I'm going to get to what Derek just talked about, which is happening in Canada already, which one of the members of parliament tried to call out and everybody laughed at him.
Yeah.
In a parliament building. And this is literally happening. Think about how crazy that is. And it's happening now in the United States, or at least the legislation's already beginning. But Derek has to take off. So he has a really exciting and important thing that he put together in regard to the Great Reset, which is called the Greater Reset. And this is specifically about challenging, or rather just putting out countering information about the points they're going to be putting out and showing you why it's disingenuous, right? So why don't you tell us about that, Derek, and when it's happening and where they can find it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the website is thegreaterreset.org. And, you know, like you said, it's about countering what they're doing, but also about trying to provide solutions. So every year in January, the World Economic Forum, which again was connected to Event 201, they're pushing the Great Reset. The head guy now, Klaus Schwab, is also a steering committee member of the Bilderberg Group that many of you know about. These people have their plan for the Great Reset. And in January, they're going to be meeting virtually, not digital, not in person this year, they claim, January 25th through the 29th, where they normally meet in Switzerland. And they've already kind of announced that they will be putting the full vision of the Great Reset. We haven't even fully heard what it is yet. They announced it in June. Klaus Schwab put out a book, and there's been some, you know, some videos and podcasts, but they're going to be announcing the full kind of unveiling in January. And we started thinking, rather than us spending 5 days as activists and journalists and researchers just obsessively watching the World Economic Forum and look what they're talking about, let's, you know, be afraid of this, or let's be concerned about this, rather than just putting our energy into that, why not hold our own event where we talk about what does a people's reset or a greater reset look like? A reset that acknowledges, like the World Economic Forum talks about, that much of the world is unsustainable and that much of the world is in a state of falling apart and crumbling. Unfortunately, it's not just accidental. It's being done by this predator class, the same predator class that is now presenting themselves as the solution to the unsustainability. They're the ones responsible for it. So their vision is top down. It's authoritarian. It's centralized. They talk about it. It's sustainable. It's just, it's equitable, but it's not. This is a technocratic vision where these elite scientists and experts like Bill Gates and others rule the world and manipulate the world for their own purposes in the alleged, name of doing the good for the people. But it's very much a top-down authoritarian vision where their utopia will be by force. So we are going to be offering an alternative vision, again, at thegreaterreset.org, and we're going to be promoting individual liberty, decentralization, alternatives to the centralized healthcare system and alternatives to vaccines, obviously, alternatives to the central banking currency system, as well as talking with some people who are already building intentional communities who are doing this in the countryside, in the jungles, in the U.S. and elsewhere. And we're going to be providing real examples. So it's 5 days, January 25th through the 29th. It's going to be streamed directly through the website, as well as a number of different other platforms. And I'm hoping that maybe The Last American Vagabond and some other people who want to stream it as well, we can maximize our reach as much as possible. We have, I think, 20 to 30 speakers now, and they're all listed on the website, but I will say that just some people that are on there include Vandana Shiva, Dr. Mercola, got James Corbett, Rosa Corey, Jack Spirko, the Survival Podcast. We're bringing together a lot of different people. This is not about spreading one specific message. We're bringing people with a diverse thought of ideas, Charles Eisenstein, Richard Grove. So there's going to be people who don't necessarily agree with things, and there's going to be people that I don't necessarily agree with. But the point is that these people are offering different alternatives to the World Economic Forum vision, to the government, global government vision. And I think it's something that people across the world can really benefit from. And so the event is going to be streamed completely for free through the website and through our channels. You have to pay nothing to watch it. It'll be streamed in the evening in US time, Central time, from about 5 o'clock to 10 p.m. And there will be each day there will be a speaker that discusses the problems, showing you what the World Economic Forum has in mind. And then that'll be followed up by a speaker discussing the solutions. All the speakers go into the solutions. So I'm really excited about this. Again, it's completely free. We did just announce, for anybody who's interested, that we are going to host an in-person event in Mexico, Zihuatanejo, Mexico, on those same days. And that event is going to be just $30 if you want to appear in person, hang out with a bunch of like minds, watch the show. But even if you can't come down to Mexico, we're encouraging everybody to organize local watch parties wherever you are so that we can really make this an international event. And all around the world, people can hear these ideas. They can discuss them in their groups, and we can start unplugging from these systems, because it's important for us to continue to expose this stuff like you're doing, Ryan, and like I do and other people. But I believe we also now in 2021, more than ever, we need to move into the solutions phase of we're going to keep trying to unplug people from the matrix and wake them up. But we also have to give people solutions of what's the next steps. How can we move away from these systems rather than just putting our faith in politicians or just, watching it crumble without doing anything? So if you guys are interested in taking a proactive role, I really invite you to go to thegreaterreset.org, sign up for the email updates, and we'll be sending out lots of updates, and start organizing something in your area. And just stay tuned to the website, because we're going to be posting lots of new information. And I hope, Ryan, that we're seeing if we have room for an alternative media panel, because I would like you and a few of our other colleagues to be a part of that as well, to talk about some of the works that we've been doing to expose this whole thing. So yeah, I just wanted to share that with everybody, because Ryan's about to get into a lot more important information that he does every single day. And it's a part of this greater vision that many of us are recognizing. We've got that term, the greater reset, trending now, where they're calling us conspiracy theorists for talking about it, right? So we're making an effect. We're having an effect. They can't ignore us now, so they have to make fun of us. But now we have an opportunity to build outside of their systems, to actually focus on solutions. And so I'm excited about that. And then I'm excited to talk with you again, brother, and just keep kicking ass, man. Keep doing all the good work you're doing.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I'll definitely be streaming that. Make sure you guys tune in, and I'll make sure and have all the links for that below. Thanks for being here today, Derek. I know you got to take off. Appreciate all the talks and all your great work, and plenty more coming from Derek in the near future. So thanks for being here, man. All right, guys. So stick around. I would say a good amount more to go over, or maybe not the equal amount of time, but plenty more. So make sure you stick around. We're going to get right back into it. Now, before I even do that, I want to make sure something is what he's talking about is really important. really important. Start using hashtag the greater reset in like almost in contrast to where you see the great reset. And the point here is what they're pushing from a general level from the great reset is ultimately, I mean, look, here's a perfect example that I'll show you real quickly is, by the way, I was going to show his website, but it doesn't seem to be loading right now. I'll show it if it comes up. But we are talking about it's 2030 and you own nothing. We've all seen these right here is the World Economic Forum. Here is what they're telling you. Here's how life could change in my city by year 2020. Actually, now I'm realizing they altered the headline. Let me go back and find, look, just so you guys can see it. It's funny because what they used to say was right here. This, welcome to 2030. I own nothing, have no privacy, and life's never been better. As you can see, World Economic Forum. So just so we're clear, even that was pushed back enough to where they had to change their own headline because that's what this is right here. Same article, changed headline. Oh, and also note that they didn't put an asterisk anywhere that said, hey, we changed the headline because people didn't agree with what we were saying. Great journalism as always, but this is what they're trying to tell you, that we're going to reset the whole world and we're going to make sure it's equitable and fair, except for the rulers at the top who control everything. But yeah, it's fair for everybody else. We're going to just, I guess, hope that they're good people at the top. If you don't own anything, somebody has to control the flow of goods and services. Yeah, there's somebody at the top who's powerful. And I'd still pretend like that won't be the very people that we're picturing right now. This is what they want. The point is that Derek is talking about, instead of listening to what they're throwing at us and saying that, oh, well, we need to sell everything we own and make sure that that everything is equitable and fair. They're going to stand up point to point and counter what they're saying, not with that's wrong and you're crazy, but here's what we should be doing. Right? They're going to stand up and say, okay, so you're arguing that, let's say, fossil fuels are a problem and here's what you want to do. Here's what we should be doing. And here's why what they're doing is only really in benefit of the elitist circle. Here's why what we're proposing is better for everybody. And it's equal. And it's not actually, it's not the equal they're selling. It's the equal that's actually fair and equitable for people in regard to a fair and equal society, something that I would call anarchism, but that people just simply don't seem to understand today. Anyway, the point is what they're doing is very, very important. And it is going to be something that's going to be used to challenge the general, the whole premise of what they're doing and show you why it's actually very, very dangerous for you. I don't know why this doesn't. Oh, there we go. Finally came up. The Greater Reset. I will include this in the show notes for you guys, an initiative of the Freedom Cell Network. Just you guys know, he did offer for me to speak, and I just totally dropped the ball, and I completely it didn't get going fast enough, and I didn't want to hold up the whole thing. So it's on me, but I will absolutely take part in his panel like he was talking about. Derek just really does fantastic work, and I hope you guys check out everything else that he's doing outside of The Last American Vagabond. But let's continue. This is just continuing on from the vaccine discussion. So we were just talking about the idea. Oh, and actually, I want to reiterate this just so we're very aware of how important this is, because we've talked about this, as you all know, the Pentagon study. I don't think I'll be able to pull that up off the top. 36%. No, it's not popping up off the top, but I'm sure I can find that included. But I've talked about it many times. The Pentagon did the study in the early 2020 that came to the conclusion that vaccines, flu vaccines specifically, increase your risk of other infections. That's a simple fact that they came to. And by the way, we're finding that in a lot of different ways right now, right? We're talking about things like pathogenic priming and ADE, which was antibody dependency. I always forget what that stands for. Let's see. Antibody dependent enhancement, both of which seem very similar. Basically, you get the vaccine it seems to create an antibody response. But when you actually come into contract when you confront the wild version of the virus, it makes you exponentially more sick. So it does the opposite of what it says. Important to understand that this is something that we should be very concerned about, because in every place where flu vaccines have been pushed aggressively, like in nursing homes in New York and other places, we saw a very, very, very large reaction. There's something to that, but they don't want you considering that. But here's something else happening in regard to the vaccine that's just absolutely incredible. By the way, again, this great account that you should be following if you're not, he's picking up right where I left off, It says, we know you're starving. Oh, here, let's just read this first, because this is absolutely incredible. There's a lot of these I'm seeing now. They're basically trying to manipulate and bribe people who are barely not even able to feed their families without breadlines. More nursing homes are getting the COVID-19 vaccine, but a recent survey found nearly 72% of certified nursing assistants don't want to be vaccinated. Right? They must be anti-science, anti-vax, fringe, weirdo conspiracy theorists, right? You can't just keep calling everybody who recognizes the danger here anti-science when you're literally talking to people in the medical field and the scientific field. And I mean, it's just silly, but that's what they're doing. Remember when it was just a couple of fringe YouTube channels and Dr. Buttar and Dr. Mikovits, and that's all they could say? Ooh, you fringe weirdos in that corner. Can't do that anymore, even though they're still basically talking about it that way. And by the way, I've interviewed both of them, and what they said about both of them is incorrect. But nearly 72% of all certified nurses don't want it. One Georgia company, though, well, they're offering staffers who take the shot a free breakfast at Waffle House. I mean, this how little they think of you, right? I mean, this is what I said. Not really a quote. It's my, you know, what they're saying. We know you're starving and we just gave you basically nothing, $600 one time. So here's a junk food breakfast. Only one per starving family, though, as long as you take our intentionally rushed experimental injection that even our own medical personnel are refusing. This is what they think of us. This is what they think of you. Like, if they literally believe that if you're freaked out about how dangerous this is and they go, oh, well, here's a Waffle House breakfast. Oh, okay. Well, that puts aside my completely justified dangers about how dangerous this vaccine is. How stupid is that? But this is what they think of us. This is just funny. It's just so silly. The whole thing, it doesn't make any sense. Here's another one. Honest question. How has Wuhan achieved this without a vaccine? Anybody? Right? This is happening in Wuhan on New Year's Eve. Everybody doing their thing, right? But according to our U.S. government, that's just not possible without a vaccine. Anybody? Right? I mean, the point is that I'm not saying China's telling the truth. I'm just saying that no one's even addressing the reality that it's not just China, but a lot of places, Sweden, St. Petersburg, are showing us that they're living their lives normally and not toppling over in the streets. How could that be? Look at the homeless population that's completely unaffected. How can that be? Because you're being deceived. That's why. And I said, if you're even asking this very, remember, the question is, how has Wuhan been able to go back to complete normal, mass packed, complete, you know, squares full of people screaming? How has it been able to go back to that? If you're even asking this very logical and obviously relevant question, then you are a fake news, anti-science, anti-vaccine, sociopathic conspiracy theorist that doesn't care about my grandma. You understand? COVID clown world. Right. That's the point. Right. If you get it, right? If you even question this very logical thing, then you're just nuts and stupid and crazy. And I can pretend that I'm smarter than you. Right. Not obviously not me. For those that are new to the channel, this is being facetious about the way that people are. You can't even ask a very real question without being disparaged because there's nothing real going on here. That doesn't mean that there's not something, you know, the concept of an illusion does not necessarily mean that every single part of it is fake, but this whole COVID-19 pandemic is just simply not real. There are plenty of examples of the lies about the numbers, the lies about the hospitalizations, the lies about every single aspect, all of the whole thing, the severity of it, the mortality. I mean, on and on and on. There's nothing about this that adds up. I mean, just to take a quick dance back to the point, right? They're lying to you, guys. And if you can't see that, then you're just not paying attention. I'm not saying that means everything I'm saying is true. What I'm saying is they're lying. That's a fact. How and why and to what end? Well, that's be an intelligent, smart adult and realize that you have to come to those conclusions for yourself. But an alarming number of U.S. healthcare workers are refusing. I would say an inspirational number, a hopeful number of U.S. health workers are refusing to take this experimental rushed injection of a genetically altering material that is nothing like a vaccine. That is what's happening. But they're all crazy conspiracy theorists that don't care about my grandma, though, right? That's it. They're no longer heroes, too, right? The moment you do this, well, you're not a hero anymore. But I thought all healthcare workers were heroes. Didn't you just say that? But not this one, though, because he's not doing what I thought was right. Well, suddenly it becomes you just pick and choose who you want to be heroes. They're heroes. This is the ridiculous part about this whole thing. These people are heroes by virtue of holding their position, according to these people, right? What about that nurse that got caught injecting old people with heroin because they're bad sociopaths? Oh, but that person's a hero though, because they're all heroes, right? I'm not trying to argue that people who put themselves in bad, in dangerous positions to help others are to be ignored and not, you could call them a hero if you want, but not by, just because you're a nurse does not then make you a hero. Just because you're a police officer does not then make you a hero. Heroes are heroes. People who actually go out and do things, not that fat cop on the corner who doesn't care about people beating you up when there's riots because their superiors told them to stand down. That guy's not a hero. The guy who shied away from people being shot at that school, that guy's not a hero, right? People who do heroic things are heroes. But the fact that these people are standing up in the face of such aggressive pressure, I would say makes them a hero. Whether you agree with why they're doing it or not, because they're willing to do what they believe is right, even in the face of such aggressive pressure. Again, whether you disagree with them or not, that is what a hero does. Here's Alex Berenson, about that fall COVID surge. Europeans' all-cause mortality data make it clearer that it was no worse than the 2017-2018 flu season. Uh-oh, not allowed to point that out. The top-line COVID numbers are basically meaningless at this point. European all-cause mortality data make it clear that it was no worse than the flu season of 2017-18. Do you not realize how important that is? Like, if you want to be like, oh my gosh, look at between March and this and September, look at the spike. You can't just pick out a certain section and then scream about how that shows that we're in more danger. The numbers from year to year are the point. And what we're seeing show us the reality. And that's why they were so afraid of that document that even came from people we were supposed to be listening to. And then all they could do was attack her because she wasn't actually the right person. Then why did it come out at all? The point is, whether you're a scientist saying this or you're just a guy on the corner saying this, the facts are the facts. The data is right in front of you. I don't care who's saying it. Look at it, consider it, ask it for yourself. We need to realize that this is not happening the way that they say it is, period. Even when they're combining pneumonia and flu, even with a false positive PCR test that dramatically increases the illusion of cases, even with the idea that anybody that dies anywhere after getting a PCR test like that is a COVID-19 case. These are ridiculous. On its face. And this, guys, is why I'm being censored from every platform. And by the way, without justification, without an email, without anything. There's a reason for that. It's because they can't point out. They can't say, look, here's what he did wrong. Because I didn't do anything wrong. I may be talking about things they don't like. I may be arguing things that they disagree with. But didn't that used to be okay in a free society? I guess we don't have that anymore. And that's what we should remember. But here's another point. This is incredibly serious, Dr. Mary points out. It was minimally affecting children in the first wave. We now have a whole ward of children here. No context. No, well, they're here because they have other problems, here because they had a test and they're not sure if they're actually sick, or here all dying in this very moment. No, see, those things matter. But as Michael Yeadon points out, and remember, this is, PhD. This is the former Pfizer medical. This is a medical professional type guy that knows what he's talking about. And he's being disparaged because he's challenging the narrative. But guess what, guys? He's using science to verify his points. But he says, I find it impossible to believe. Specifically, as is implied, that SARS-CoV-2 is now causing illness and hospitalization in the demographic who, worldwide, has been found by all to be least injured. It's not plausible either that the same virus has completely altered. Oh, hold on. I don't know why that didn't. Here it is. And to continue. It's not plausible either that the same virus has completely altered its clinical profile, literally impossible, or that mutations of which there are already scores of thousands of them have rendered the virus more injurious to children. This is because the general direction via mutation is towards greater transmission and lesser lethality. Excuse me. And we're getting, think about that in regard to the UK strain that everybody's, oh my God, now we saw it in Colorado, everybody be fearful, but they already told us that it wasn't more dangerous. The WHO said it wasn't more dangerous. NERVTAG, the group, the majority of them voted that there wasn't enough evidence to think this was any more dangerous at all. But because Neil Ferguson stood up and said, we're all afraid, then Boris listen to him? Just because he was right before? No, because he was aggressively wrong to begin with. And because he seems to be their poster boy for lying to people and getting them scared based on unjust reasons. Lesser lethality. And that's what's happening now. He goes, now, I do think it's entirely possible that whereas in spring, there was almost no youngsters in hospital who had a diagnosis of COVID-19, now we have many. That's my point. People who are being told that they're deemed and sick. Why? Because maybe they got the flu. Maybe they got the chicken pox. Maybe they got any number of things. Probably not chicken pox, because I think hopefully that would be apparent. But he says that is a predictable effect flowing from inappropriate testing on a truly massive scale. Children do sadly sometimes need. That's frustrating. I swear they're doing this on purpose. Oh, here we go. I had it perfectly lined up before. To be admitted. In winter, infectious diseases are a frequent driver of pediatric admissions. Now, here again, remember this, guys. At a point when right now where literally anything is COVID, the sniffles is COVID, parents are flipping out if they believe what the media and the government are telling them. They're rushing their children in because, oh my God, he's got his foot hurts. Maybe he's got COVID. And then they put him in and they make sure and they test him and they'll PCR test. And half those kids are getting PCR positives, whether they're sick or not. We know this, guys. Even the CDC says 30% false positives, and everybody anywhere else tells you it's way higher than that, that's actually used these things before. So we're clearly seeing, and let's not ignore the possibility that there's nefarious people out there making sure that this illusion is being sold. Influenza occasionally causes severe pediatric respiratory illness, but not SARS-CoV-2. Right? So these are flus causing severe cases, which, by the way, kill children, adults, and people all the time. Flu has that effect in the past years. But that's his point, that now we're seeing flu just mixed in with COVID. They're hiding flu entirely. And his point is that that does cause what we're seeing, but not SARS-CoV-2. Feel free to believe the improbable if you wish. I don't, not based on all prior pathology. But don't. But listen to this fear-mongering doctor that says, oh, this is serious, guys. Right? Is that what a doctor would do? Just seems odd to me that it seems all revolving around fear. Here is a pediatric registrar, clinical research fellow, pediatric infectious diseases. You know, somebody again who has the right to speak on these things. He says, with the furor about kids' hospital admissions, which he's referencing this whole point, that, and basically, I believe he even comments down here. One guy, basically, this one guy who's not got a large following, like 400 people following him. He's just a nurse at one of these places. I believe it was this tweet. Maybe he's down here. Maybe not. But anyway, this person that they're citing here, the one who's saying this right here, is the person that caused this whole panic. No context, no other information, just a statement that we have a whole ward of children here. What if it was the only one in the entire country? Does that still worry you? I'm not saying I know that. The point is that context matters, and all they're doing is fear-mongering. And he's saying, with the furor about kids' hospital admissions with COVID-19, personally, I've seen none. A pediatric doctor. Locally, we have very few, and London colleagues have confirmed they also have few. Exactly. The data bears this out. See, now we get into data, not a alarming with a statement with no context, with a clip of somebody going, we're all in danger. Right, that makes it real, right? Here's data. Also note, many of our COVID readmissions, or maybe readmissions, were actually admitted for something unrelated. So think about that. Maybe COVID plus, basically they're claiming they're COVID, but people that were admitted for something completely unrelated and then are told they have COVID, right? Because of a test that has a high prevalence of false positives. But take a look at the data. Positive cases and influenza reported through. Now, this is in regard to, I think, hold on, let me make sure I got the full picture. There we go. We're talking about children, or in general, all of them, but look at the children numbers, right? Do you see it? Do you see it? Point is, it's not there. Zero. Gone. Empty. You want to give above 85, and that's where you start seeing it up. But you could just simply go down the age scale. Orange would be next, then blue, dark blue, then green, gray, yellow, and then just a blue line that you literally can't see because it's nothing. The data matters, right? This is current data as of right now. But this is incredibly serious because one guy says there's a ward full of children with zero context. This is making the rounds everywhere. The media, BBC, are all screaming about how children are now affected. That's what's happening. but I'm being censored for giving you data and facts and allowing you to think for yourself. This is the world in which we find ourselves. Now, this brings us to the point that I'm going to end with today, which I find to be very alarming and one of the most important things to show us the direction this seems to be going. Remember, we're talking about them saying, yeah, this everything will be on the table. Right? We're talking about vaccinations and the idea that they're saying that mandatory vaccinations are not, this is like saying we have not ruled out a nuclear strike, right? They're saying that it's still something they might do. So all the people that are screaming about how this is totally fake news, it'll never happen, they're telling you that it's a possibility. Now, yeah, that could just be a tool that they're using, but we can't pretend like it won't happen when they're literally saying it might happen. That seems a little stupid. But there's two things that happened just today that I got somebody brought to my attention. One of them, as they're reporting here, is a presidential act, or it says the Safeguarding Tomorrow Through Ongoing Risk Mitigation Act, or the STORM Act. Now, I see this being pointed at in an interesting way from the Trump crowd, almost as if this applies somehow to the election or different ways. You know, there's always somebody who has a theory about something. That doesn't even mean it's wrong, but I don't think it has anything to do with that. And I do think this has a lot to do with this topic. And this is what I was hoping to get Derek's all the way toward the end, the Trump administration setting the stage for a Biden surveillance state. Now, that's surveillance, but it also ties into COVID-19, right? It's contact tracing, vaccines, the whole thing, the whole biosecurity surveillance state. That's what this is. So he's saying before people respond to this, they should read the bill itself. This is about giving FEMA's administrator the ability. By the way, Corey Lynn, Corey Diggs, I recommend you follow. The ability to give grants to states for projects. From what I'm seeing, it would appear to cut through red tape for FEMA. Now, FEMA is something that has been the focal point of what they would call conspiracy theories for a long time, most of which have turned out to be correct. All kinds of things that they're creating and preparing and, you know, FEMA legislation that gives FEMA emergency powers that are very alarming. Now they're basically passing bills that allow, or these are acts that are allowing FEMA, or specifically the government, to cut through red tape to allow them grants in situations like we're currently in. Now, here's what it actually says. Safeguarding Tomorrow Through Ongoing Risk Mitigation Act, or the STORM Act, which authorizes the Federal Emergency Management Agency to provide capitalization grants to states to establish revolving funds to provide hazard mitigation assistance to reduce risks from disasters and natural hazards, which let's pretend that doesn't include COVID-19, which we know it could apply to whatever natural hazard they want it to. Now, I'm going to dig into this more, but today, just to make the point of why I think that what the surface point of what I think this is, it takes us to the next point of which Lila Safa, whatever that says, responded. Wonder how it works for those proposed intermittent camps just filed in New York. And this is crazy alarming. Okay. This was actually sent to me earlier today before I even saw this exchange. And I thought, this account actually really did put it together. You go, wait a minute. There's definitely something connected here. Right. So if we're talking about them basically allowing unrestricted, unmitigated funds flying out to FEMA, you know, the emergency management agency in regard to individual states, revolving funds for specifically the kind of things we're dealing with now, then you've got New York as an individual state saying, this relates to the removal of cases, contacts, and carriers of communicable diseases that are potentially dangerous to public health. Wow, that is crazy. Understand what they're saying is the ability as the government to take you, whether they think you're a case or contact of a case or a carrier of any communicable disease that they deem is dangerous to public health, and remove you. To what? Probably a FEMA camp. Just a thought, but here's what it actually says. The public health law is amended. A new section to read as follows. The removal and detention of cases, contacts, and carriers who are or may be a danger to public health. Maybe. So they can just say, we think you might be a danger to public health and we have to remove you from society. And it gets into exactly where. And they have the option to go to a medical facility or something private, such as a FEMA camp. Other orders That's nice. Just, you know, whatever else we decide to just jam in there. We're going to shoehorn in something else right there when it matters. The provisions of this section shall be utilized in the event that the governor declares a state of emergency, health emergency, due to an epidemic of any communicable disease. So not even a pandemic, an epidemic. Sort of like, you know, the whooping cough epidemic that didn't happen in 2009. Yeah, that one just like that, that was due to a PCR test. I won't go into it again, but I always want to include it when I bring it up. Right. This is from 2009 is H1N1. 2007 is the epidemic that wasn't, which is what the New York Times called it. Right. Where they say right in the article very clearly that the PCR test was what caused this. I was going to find the one spot where they said the point is that there was an over-reliance right here. At Dartmouth, the decision was to use the PCR test. It's a molecular test that until recently was confined to molecular biology. What happened was they told everybody that there was a whooping cough epidemic. It went on for 8 months. People got vaccinated. There was antibiotics. People were restricted. Hospitals were closed down. There were all kinds of panic. Turns out, never happened. The story of the epidemic that wasn't. Think about how crazy it is that that's even possible, and that they come to the conclusion that it was because of the PCR test that they overly relied on. And here we are today. So anything like that, such as whether created or accidentally claimed or however you want to look at it, they can then declare a state of emergency, which is basically like bat, you know, it's commonplace apparently now because of the COVID illusion. And that gives them power to detain you for any reason, no matter what, because they might think that you're sick, which is just an objective opinion. Upon determining by clear and convincing evidence that the health of others is or may be endangered by a case or a contact. So somebody, you could simply been, they can come to you and say, you were in contact with somebody that we already have detained. You have to come with us. You don't have a choice about that. Does that sound like the kind of society they tell us we live in? Just because they claim that you might be in danger or a carrier or even a suspected case. So not even somebody who's been contacted, but just somebody who they think might be sick because why they, somebody told them they did this and oh, you got the sniffles and oh, now you're coming with us. And then even a contact of the suspected case or a carrier of contagious disease that in the opinion of the governor, so completely up to him, no legislation, no voting, no constituents, after consultation with the commissioner, okay, two people, may pose an imminent and significant threat to the public health resulting in severe morbidity and high mortality. How in the world would they even know that? I mean, look at where we are now. They said that then in the beginning. Imagine what if they had this, what they could have done in the beginning. And they're wrong. They were wrong. They turned out to be 100% wrong. The governor or his or her delegate, including but not limited to the commissioner of the heads of local health departments, may order the removal and the detention of such a person or of a group of such persons by issuing a single order. So now you can say, oh, you know, all that group right there, whatever group you want to insert into your mind, political or otherwise, they can say you were in contact with this and now you need to be detained, the whole group, all of them. Oh, this whole big protest here. You're all possibly contagious. Now you all have to come. Every single one of you protesting against the murder of that person. Oh, you're all sick now. Come with us. Let's not pretend like it wouldn't be abused. An entire group. Guys, this is chilling. This is horrifying reality that they are rolling out right in front of us right now. Identifying such persons either by name or by a reasonable, a reasonably specific description of the individuals or group being detained. This is not only unaccountable, like they're actually writing into the definition of the law that they don't even need to know who they think you are. We just need to, so that you look like the guy we were told might be sick, you're coming with us. This is not a free society. You can't do these kinds of things in a free society. What this is the crumbling illusion of what we thought we had rapidly deteriorating right in front of our eyes. Oh, that guy had a beard and a shaved head. That looks like you. Come with us. Reasonably specific description of an individual or group being detained. Of a group? How do you reasonably specifically describe an entire group of people? And then you're going to guess based on, gosh darn it, this is horrifying. Such person or group of persons shall be detained in a medical facility or other appropriate facility, or premises designated by the governor, or his or her delegee, or complying with subdivision 5 of this section. So, you know, possibly a FEMA camp. But don't worry, though. We already funded them all with the STORM Act. Thanks, Donald Trump. Make sure you made that happen. The reality here, guys, is this is what Trump is doing now on the way out. That's giving Biden these powers. That's giving these local groups these powers. But how does that align with what you thought he was trying to do for you? Realize that he's either another puppet or was completely snowed by people who told him he was going to get something he didn't get. In any case, even if you believe he's the person you thought he was, the system is made so it doesn't actually happen the way you thought it would. We need to see that by now. Hopefully all these Trump supporters that believe in the Constitution, that believe in all the stuff that we're talking about, will actually begin to realize what I'm saying and come to help us fight what we all should have been fighting. You can now be detained in any facility. Apparently anything. A private facility could mean whatever they want it to mean. 3, a person or a group removed detained by the order of the governor or by his or her delegee pursuant to the subdivision 2 of this section shall be detained for such a period and in such a manner as the department may direct in accordance with this section. It basically means as long as they need to, no matter what, if they think you might be a danger, period. Notwithstanding any inconsistent provision of this section, a confined case or a carrier who is detained pursuant to subdivision, what we just went over, shall not continue to be detained after the department determines that such a person is no longer contagious. So that's it. So as long as they want to keep you, as long as they can argue that you might still be sick, which can literally go on as long as they want it to. A suspected case or suspected carrier who is detained pursuant to the subdivision 2 of this section shall not be continued to be detained after the department determines with the exercise of due diligence that such a person is not infected with or has not been exposed to such a disease, or if infected with or exposed to such a disease, no longer is or will become contagious. Up to them. Now, let's not pretend as well that we don't already have things like this lined up for, you know, arguments of terrorism. And there were already cases where that was broadly ignored, that they kept him as long as they wanted to because they said, well, he's a bad guy. So these things don't apply. So let's not pretend like our government won't do the exact same thing here. Right? Someone's pointing out the chat, 2 weeks to flatten the curve. And now we're making legislation to detain you indefinitely until they decide you're no longer potentially sick. A person who is detained pursuant to these subdivisions is as a contact of a confirmed case. So somebody that they think might be sick just because they claim you had contact, you know, because of your phone app that tells them what they wanted to tell them, that you're around somebody or a carrier, shall not continue to be detained after the department determines a person is not infected with a disease or such a contact. Same thing. If a person who is detained pursuant to this division is a contact of a suspected case, shall not be continued to be detained. So this is abstract. So you're now a contact of somebody who might be sick. So they don't even know if the suspected case is sick. They think maybe. And then they know that you got contact with that person they haven't yet even verified is sick. Think about how crazy that is. Here's what it says. Will not be detained after the department determines. So now they're deciding with the exercise of due diligence, which they never seem to do, that the suspected case was not infected. So now you're detained as long as it takes them to decide the person they thought was might be sick is deemed to be not sick. I mean, that is the equivalent of them swooping you up off the corner of the street and saying, we heard your phone told us you had contact with a person 2 days ago. You're coming with us right this moment. You can't deny it. You can't say anything about it. And you're going to be held in this cell or this FEMA camp or this medical facility until we decide the person that your phone said you were in contact with is actually not sick. So you just get to sit back and wait for them to tell you that you're safe. And then pretend like that's what was really happening. It's pretty sickening, isn't it? As they scream about doing this all for us. Nah, I'll let you guys read through the rest of it. I think you get the gist. It's pretty ridiculous. It really is next level ridiculous to realize that they're using what they already know against us. It's really never been more clear. It's just time for us, as always, to stand up and ask questions. Challenge the narrative, push the facts that they just don't care about today, right? But thank you for being here. Hopefully you guys can share this information. Please make sure you check out Derek's information as well and the articles that he has talked about and that he shared in The Last American Vagabond, or that we posted on The Last American Vagabond, and make sure you continue to share The Greater Reset. Somebody's asking for a link in the chat. As always, 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 the links will be below the video when we're done, just as always. Or in fact, the links there to the website where it has the links, as always, 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 all the links will be included, no matter what, without fail. So thank you for being here. Make sure you share the information. Make sure you research the information for yourself and make sure you come to your own conclusions about it. So when people ask you about your opinion, you can tell them your opinion. And then you could actually digest and break it down for people and be like, well, here's why, and here's what they did, and here's what somebody said before, and have an intelligent discussion about it. Not just say, here's the truth, and then have nothing to follow it up. Right? That'll only make them walk away going, oh, this guy's a conspiracy theorist. Like, you need the facts to back it up. And hopefully that's what we're doing here. So thank you so much, guys, for joining me. Thank you all for being here. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
يصنعوا فيروس وينشروه في العالم باش الشركات الرأسمالية تحصل أموال. الأمصال لا تباع، الدواء لا يباع. إذا كانت هي تباع بثمن غالي معناها تجارة. اعلنوا قولوا الدواء مجاني. الأمصال المجانية مش حتنتشر الفيروسات من اللي خلقوا فيها باش يعملوا أمصال وباش تكسب منها الشركات الرأسمالية. المصانع تشتغل بتاعت المخابرات.